Well, you can be going to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. We were there this morning. We'll continue in our search here, our pursuit of understanding what the Bible says about casting down strongholds. I appreciate so much the good crowd here tonight. Thank you for coming back and joining us on our journey together. And I will say in the days ahead, we'd like to deal with exactly how do you cast down those strongholds, those imaginations, those high things. And we'll be talking about how to cast those down. We'll also be dealing with a very important subject matter that we'll unearth tonight a little bit more, and that is allowing God to heal hurts and dealing with hurts and watching God heal those and overcoming those that have occurred, particularly from different past issues. So what tonight we'd like to do is continue what we did this morning. We'll just review briefly, and then we'll get right into our third point, which we'll take for the rest of the time here. And we started the message, for those that are just joining us tonight, talking about in 1988, there was something called Operation Breakthrough. And it was up on the very top of Alaska. And there were some three gray whales that were completely encircled by ice, and the international community began literally to be interested in getting them freed. And we talked about they think two of them got away, but that was not the point. There was a concerted effort for a breakthrough. That's what they called it, Operation Breakthrough. And of course, we talked about the fact that although that was something that captured the imagination of the world, and some of you may remember that being on the news back in 1988, there's something far more important that is for us as human beings, to have breakthroughs. Sometimes I think we all feel that we've reached a point where we know there's more in the Christian life, but we can't seem to get there. We know God's used us. We've seen certain levels of effectiveness. We've seen answers to prayer. It's not that there's been nothing, but we feel like we hit a ceiling and we just can't seem to break to the next level. And I think all of us, our burden here is to determine what is it, ask the Lord to show us those things that perhaps we've stuffed away. We have maybe not necessarily attempted to just not deal with them out of rebellion. It's just we didn't know else to do it. We pushed them away. Sometimes they just sit there and not even realizing that they are issues that continue to limit all that God wants to do. We started this morning talking about a stronghold, and that a stronghold is simply something, it's a wrong way of thinking. It's faulty reasoning. And of course, the word imaginations is that very word, the word we get logical from. It's illogic logic, if that makes any sense at all. It's a faulty argument. Somebody arguing, and their conclusion is incorrect. And so it's faulty reasoning. And then we talked about every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And that there are things that cause us to turn to them instead of turning to God. Now, we want to, just that word knowledge, we talked about the importance of understanding that it's talking about experiential knowledge. So what I want us to do now when it comes to symptoms, we'll go ahead and get to the symptoms now, the symptoms of strongholds, is to begin to understand that the text here is going to show us two issues that are very clearly evidenced when you have a stronghold. The very first one is this. You see, if there's, you've got a high thing, it's exalted, don't miss this, against the knowledge of God. So in other words, it's what you embrace because you don't know God. It's like this, friends. If you know God and you have a relationship with Him and you know the reality of His presence in your life, that's what you turn to. But many times we find substitutes, and those are high things. They have the audacity to exalt themselves above knowing God, which is just absolutely ridiculous. So the very first symptom I want us to note is we don't know God. We don't know God. In other words, we know about God. We know theology. If we gave you a test on systematic theology, some of you might even do pretty well, Bible doctrines. You might even do it, especially if you've been here for years. You know the doctrine. You know about God. But the question is, do you know Him? In other words, did you meet with Him today? When you have a problem, do you run to Him and do allow His presence to be that which gives you satisfaction? He's going to take care of this problem. And I think all of us understand if we've been saved any length of time, we know those moments when the very presence of God, we know it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. There's been moments in my life when those, some very traumatic moments where you perhaps have a death of a loved one or perhaps bad news health-wise in someone you love. And I think of one particular situation I don't talk a lot about because it's a little more on the sacred side, but a very bad news situation came in. And I remember that I could take you to the very moment when God showed up in my heart and said, it's going to be all right. And it was all right. And I'll explain it. It was just the presence of God met the need. And so the Bible is telling us here that these strongholds are things that pop up instead of turning to that relationship with God. And those of us who have had moments where we walked of God still know the temptation, if we have strongholds, to still go back to those strongholds. And many times we do. Even though we have had moments where God has showed up in our life and we've had a relationship and we've walked with Him, we still understand the power of those strongholds. The idea of a stronghold is this: it won't go away. I remember a few years ago, Dave Young was preaching, and he said something about a stronghold that was extremely instructive for me and actually got me on the journey. He said a stronghold is not necessarily something that gets you every day. Now, it might be. Sometimes maybe we have a sin that gets us every day. But he said a stronghold could simply be something that gets you every 3 weeks. Or how about this, something that gets you every 6 months. Or how about this, something that gets you once a year. But the problem is you can't shake it. It keeps coming back. So a stronghold is something that you can't get rid of. Why? Because you've given Satan the topography, the topos, and he has built, you've handed him the bricks of wrong thinking, the faulty reasoning, and as a result of that, he has built a way of thinking in your heart and life that you have a tendency, the enemy uses that to cause you to be defeated in your Christian life. So you say, you know, preacher, so that question would this be, when you don't turn to God, what do you turn to? Now let's look at a few things that would be evidences that we don't really know God. And what I'm talking about, there may be moments we know God, but that moment, that's not what we're turning to. We are not turning to God in our relationship with Him. So number one, I want you to see unfulfilled pursuits. Unfulfilled pursuits. Well, we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And in our world, and even Christians, we find ourselves caught up in this. If we're finding a lack of satisfaction in life, we have a tendency sometimes to go to the scene, the things, what the world has to offer, the vacation or whatever. Things that sometimes in and of themselves are not wrong, but that's what we learn to go to for satisfaction. Sometimes it's simply going to our phone. Think about it. When you have a few moments and you're really not fulfilled with life, well, what do you turn to? I want us to just spend a moment. Just a moment, I'm going to ask our video people to show a little clip of a guy who has more money than is collectively found in this auditorium. Unless there's somebody in here that I don't know about you, okay? Yeah, I'm pretty sure he has more money than everybody together in this auditorium. He certainly has more money than the pastoral staff, that I know. But anyway, I'm going to show a clip, plus the fact he has fame like none of us in this room. Not that any of us are famous, but you take the collective fame in this room and he has more than that. So I'd like us to hear from an NFL football quarterback about how that has satisfied him.
Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life is me. I think it's gotta be more than this.
What's the answer?
I wish I knew.
And you know, friends, we do. Now I'm looking out in this audience, I don't think any of you are gonna quarterback an NFL football team. And probably none of us are gonna have the money of Tom Brady. So if he's not fulfilled, pretty sure fame and money aren't gonna do it. You with me on that? And the truth is, friend, we all know in this room exactly what Tom Brady's looking for. We do. When he says, I wish I knew, doesn't that do something to your heart? You say, Tom, we do know. Tom, we know. And you know, the sad thing is, unless a miracle occurs, Tom Brady will probably never find it. You see, but the truth is, there's a lot of Christians who identify with that too. I'm talking to Christians that you really identified with Tom Brady and you don't have his money nor his fame. But you're out here thinking, there's got to be something more. There's got to be something more. Listen, I read the biographies often of great Christians, and I'll tell you, in many of their lives, they come to this point. There's got to be something more. And it's the very thing that brings them to a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ they never knew existed. They knew about God, but they didn't know Him. And as a result, they found themselves parched. There's got to be something more. So unfulfilled pursuits, oh yes. That indicates we got a stronghold in our life. We're looking for the wrong place to bring fulfillment and satisfaction. But oh, number two is even a bigger one. I've already alluded to it, but unhealed hurts. Unhealed hurts. It's what the Lord Jesus said when he came in Luke chapter 4 and opened the book of Isaiah there, if you remember that. after the temptation. And he quoted out of the book of Isaiah, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal," anybody know? "The brokenhearted." You see, the fact is when Jesus shows up, he begins to heal our heart hurts. And we're living in a country that is literally, absolutely, I believe, blasted with people who have been hurt. Now, hurts are one of those things that many times occur in our youth, and they can occur in adult life. There's no doubt about that. But it seems that the ones that often are the ones that go deep are ones that came in childhood. I was a few years ago, I remember I was in a church in out a little bit west from here, and in Sunday school, the Lord just burdened my heart to deal with bitterness. I dealt out of Hebrews 12, this message of bitterness, and finished the message, sat down, and the pastor who's older than me got up, and he had tears in his eyes. And he said to his congregation, he said, "I learned something this morning." He said, "I've been bitter for years at my dad." He said, "My dad was a good man. My dad would go to work, he'd work hard. He'd come home, he'd grab his newspaper, get in front of the television, and he'd pretty much be there till he went to bed. He said, "My dad never engaged me as a son. He provided everything I needed. He provided all my meals. He provided my food. But I had no father-son relationship with my dad." And I don't know how to explain it, friend. You could see the ache, the pain, and the hurt on probably a 50-some-year-old man about a father that hurt him by not engaging in a father-son relationship. Now, again, these are difficult things to talk about because I recognize if that's you, it brings up the pain. And one of the ways you know you have unhealed hurts is this. When you think about it, it still hurts. It still hurts. The way you know that the hurt is healed, when you think about it, it doesn't hurt anymore. Now, this statement I made, I think I made it on Saturday night, but I'm going to make it again. This does come off the Conqueror series. But here's what he said. "The vast majority of men I have counseled," and he's counseled thousands, "the vast majority of men I've counseled who struggle with sexual issues have father wounds in their souls." Now, that's a stunning statement. In other words, there's two issues with fathers, angry fathers and absent fathers. Angry father wounds are obviously come from words. You can't do anything right. You'll be nothing but a digger. You're worthless. Now, it's stunning for me to even make those statements. The only reason I do is because they're made. And they bring deep wounds in the heart of that child. Now, please understand, some of you here say, "Preacher, that's me." And we're going to talk about how to process this. I know it's not at this moment, we're just trying to diagnose the problem. But one thing I can say right now is probably in most cases, your father had father wounds. And often one hurting father produces a hurting son who becomes a hurting father who produces a hurting son. And some of you can see the cyclic nature of the situation. If you had a father who said things, who was an angry father, and said very hurtful things that perhaps were never resolved. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've kind of learning here over the summertime, dealing with the hurt issue is a tender issue because those that are hurt, it still hurts. How about... what happens in some cases is, now I know that sometimes a father may deeply love his children, but perhaps because the way he was raised, he had a struggle in communicating it. Sometimes parents struggle in communicating love. And sometimes, in fact, I talked to one dear lady and that was up in years, and she basically said, "All my life long, I've kind of figured nobody loved me, and as a result, I am not worth loving." And she realized, "I have believed a lie." And those all came from wounds that came from her childhood. And all I want to just simply say is strongholds are often built with wounds. Things that are said, the angry father and the second one would be called the absent father. That doesn't mean he's literally absent. Just like that particular situation I just mentioned, he was there, but he wasn't there. It could be that situation, a father who doesn't engage the children, or it could be literally an absent father. Several times I have had teenagers with tears streaming down their face, sobbing, teenage boys who are 16 years old, who in their sight of their peers are cool, they're the big dudes on campus, so to speak, sob with a counselor as they talked about the fact that they hated their father. You know why? Because they never met him. He left, and they had no idea where he was. They never texted him, never phone called him. Deep father wounds. And these are very real things. And Satan gets in on these things. Satan smells blood. Could I say that? And he goes after it. And many strongholds come out of unhealed hurts. And sometimes, friends, there could even be a blame, like, you know, I'd be better in life if it wasn't for my dad, or if my wife wouldn't nag me so much, etc. And there's blame that comes out of these hurts. They're very real hurts. And as a result of the hurts, you feel you'd have been a better person if that person hadn't hurt you, and blame, which gets into the bitterness issue. So all these are real things. I remember several years ago, I was talking with a man who I deeply respect, and I am sure I need to talk to him again, because I am sure by his very demeanor that the hurt was healed. But he told me something that happened with his father, and I'm thinking, wow, that had to hurt. He was a football player for the Delta High School football team in Colorado, and he played in the Colorado State Championship back in the 60s. And actually, Pastor Van Gelderen attended that game. He was a teenager at the time. The young gentleman we're talking about was a little bit older. And Durango, Colorado was playing the Delta High School in a state championship football game. And this young man, that game, broke the Colorado rushing record. I mean, he gained so many yards that he broke whatever record there was. And he told me, I was talking to him about that one day, and he smiled real big. He said, Jim, did I ever tell you, or did you ever know what happened after that game? I said, no, I've never heard that, what happened. He said, my father, and he had a big smile on his face. That's why I believe he did process this, and it's amazing that he did. He said, my father was waiting for me after the football game. He said, I went out to the car, stepped in. Here it is. I have just broken the Colorado State rushing record. He said, do you know the only thing my father said? He said, when you're running down the line on that one run down the line, he said, you stepped out of bounds. If you hadn't stepped out of bounds, you got more yardage. The one mistake he had made in the entire football game was the only thing his father talked about. Now, I don't know about you, that had to hurt. And I'm talking to some of you know what I'm talking about. Every negative thing your father did, that's what he talked about. Rarely got commendation. And I'm going to tell you, he probably got rarely commendation. Probably his dad did the same thing. Father wounds. There are mother wounds. There's no doubt about that. You can take the same analogy over to mothers, but I'm simply saying the more prevalent are clearly father wounds. Wounds. And you wounds, when we do the message on wounds, we're going to clearly see that one of the big things about wounds is what is spoken. And another thing I think it's very important to recognize about wounds is that the devil is, I believe, deeply involved in it. He is deeply involved in it. And we'll talk about that, and I believe dealing with him is essential in dealing with wounds. But it's very important for you to recognize, okay, in fact, I think I mentioned this when I preached at the beginning of the summer, maybe I can put it this way, the series that I watched there, I remember the guy said, take the 10 most hurtful things that have ever happened and write them down. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't have any hurts. My mom and dad were great. I don't have any hurts. Then I started thinking, and I was amazed. First grade. There's some girls who were autistic right across the street. Evidently, they were out playing one day, and they had one of those teeter-totter things that span like this, and it hit them and bruised them deeply, bruised their wherever it hit, probably about their hips. And I remember one day my parents got a call, and they had accused me. The mother was seeing the wounds and said, who did that to you? And they said, me, across the street, me, Jim Van Gelder did it. I will never forget that. I remember going in my Sunday best, going next door, going across the street, sitting down in that living room with that mom and dad and my mom and dad, falsely accused, 6 years old. It's like, nobody's going to believe me, I'm six. I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to jail. You know, I don't mind you laughing, but I wasn't laughing at that time. I can laugh now. But I was horrified, absolutely horrified. Fortunately, the girls later confessed, no, it was the teeter-totter. It wasn't Jim Van Gelderen. So I didn't go to jail. Okay, but anyway. But you know, I thought about that. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. It still hurt. All these years later, I'm thinking, that is odd. Then I immediately went to 14 years old. I'm on a soccer field, and we're in a close game with Calumet. They were red and white. We were green and gold. I used to think green and gold were such cool colors. Man, they're about the most uncool colors you could come up with. But anyway, I'm sorry. There's Green Bay Packer fans in here. That was bad. Okay. That was really bad. It was Kelly Green. That's what made it bad. Okay, the forest green's cool. Okay, but anyway, I got to get out of that somehow. Okay, but we're in the green and gold. They're in the red and white. You know, we call them the Cardinals. We called ours, we're with the A's. You know how it is when you're young. And I remember it was a close game. It was 1-1. I mean, we were in a close game, and the ball came. I chested the ball, and make a long story short, of course, it needed to get in the goal, and it didn't get there. I remember the coach was livid, pulled me out, and I don't remember what he said. I just remember he said a lot of hurtful things. Now, I'm going to tell you on the hurt message how I've worked with both of those situations. Now, I know they're minor compared to what a lot of hurts that are in this room. I get that. I understand that. But I was trying to go back and think, okay, what about this? And the thing that I recognized the moment I thought about both of those things is that immediately they hurt like they happened yesterday. Wow, that's strange. You know what they are? Unhealed hurts. And I really do encourage you, because we're going to get to that message when we deal with hurts. I encourage you to write down the 10 most hurtful things and say, God, I want to be healed. I want to be healed. God, I want to be healed. Because Jesus came to heal the brokenhearted, which must mean that he really does want to heal you. And I'm telling you, friend, I really believe he wants to heal you. I really believe that. And I believe that there are the evidences of people who have been healed. That inner wounds, we all talk about, we pray for cancer, and we should, and we need to. That's a bad thing. We pray about other diseases that people come with, and I do that. I pray for people. I'm all about that. But you know what we don't pray for? We don't pray for the emotional wounds. You know why? Because we don't know. They're just in there. We kind of cope with them. We go through life. But they're very real wounds. But I do believe God can heal them. And I want you to get hope about the matter, but they need to be identified, because many times on that real estate of unhealed hurts, the devil has a heyday. And that's why in many of your marriages, there's this holdback. Don't get too close. You know why? Because I don't want to get hurt again. And the only way to get close is for God to heal the hurts. But he can heal the hurts. Now that brings us to a third issue, and this would be an unforgiving spirit. Now this is clearly tied into this one, no doubt about it. It's clearly tied into unhealed hurts, because what unhealed hurts become is an unforgiving spirit. Because I don't know about you, anytime you're hurt, immediately we obviously sense that person wronged me. They did something that has caused me difficulty and pain. And in a certain sense, they become in debt to us. They don't look at it that way, but we do. Man, they hurt me, man, they need to do this. I remember two young ladies in the hallway there in Portsmouth, Virginia, large Christian school, tears in their eyes, both of them with deadbeat dads that they didn't live with. And they were, I said, Brother Van Gelder, could we talk to you? I said, sure. And one of them got angry tears in her eyes. She said, my dad needs to do this. And my dad needs to do this. And they went on and on. And I finally, when they were done, I said, young ladies, I said, I know you're hurting. But I said, you have a choice. I said, you can continue to hold on to the hurt, and you can continue to hold on to your expectations for your father that he probably will never meet and be as miserable as you are now, or you can get a hold of the grace of God and get the hurt healed. An unforgiving spirit. I remember one young lady down on the border in Texas. I was at Camp Loma de Linda, and I know I didn't have the accent on that, Francisco. Sorry about that. But anyway, I'm down there on the border at that camp. And I remember a young lady came up to me, and I had preached on forgiveness, and she was angry at me. I've always wondered, why do you get angry at me? I'm just the mouthpiece. It's his message, you know. But nonetheless, they get angry at the messenger. And she says, I just can't forgive her. I just can't forgive her. And she began to tell me a pretty bad story. And to be honest with you, from a human standpoint, it's like, yeah, that's probably right. Maybe you can't. But I remember having to take my Bible and say, no, you can, by the grace of God, you can. And I remember I had to leave that camp, I think a tad early. And as I was leaving that camp, the young lady came up to me beaming. And she said, preacher, I just wanted you to know I've forgiven her. But an unforgiving spirit. That brings us to number four. This is kind of interesting. And that is what we're going to call unresolved shame. Unresolved shame. Shame is something that goes to the core of you. Let me put it this way. Guilt is because of what you've done. Shame is because of who you are. I think of the book of Romans chapter 7, verse 24. Oh, wretched man that I am. So shame has a lot to do with who we think we are. And the amazing thing about shame, friends, is it many times again allows Satan to build a stronghold up. It's like the father who says to a son, "You can't do anything right," and that kid goes throughout life thinking, "Something's wrong with me. I can't do anything right." Or it would be the idea, like, for instance, I read the story. It's a stunning story. It's hard for me to even tell it. Some of these stories are hard to tell. But I was reading the story of a young man who won an MVP on his basketball team. I think it was an MVP for the whole season, the whole league. I mean, it was a big deal. And his dad, you know what his dad said to him after he got the trophy? "You didn't deserve that. Somebody else is better than you." His entire life, he went through thinking, "Something's wrong with me. Something is wrong with me." Now, what contributes to shame that complicates it is sin. Because a lot of men who have unhealed hurts get into pornography, they get into sexual addictions, they get into issues that are very troublesome, and it fuels it because they say, "I'm worthless, something's wrong with me." And the truth is, friend, if you are saved and in this room, you have to understand your identity should not be with your sin. Your identity should be with who you are in Jesus Christ. Now, I will tell you that part of the series is going to continue on Sunday morning because Pastor is doing Romans 6, 7, and 8. And I will tell you, if you have any issue of shame, something's wrong with me, then you need to come and hear a message on Romans 6. Because it is going to deal with who you are in Jesus Christ. In other words, friends, it's like this. If you are saved, you are a saint. You say, "I don't feel like a saint." Well, I don't know if I feel like a saint a whole lot, but I'm sure glad that God calls me one. And the point I'm making, friend, is if your identity is even tied up with your past failure, you can get into a wrong sense of who you are, because the Bible says you're forgiven, you're beloved, you're accepted in the beloved. I am not minimizing your sin. I'm simply saying don't let your past failure identify who you are. Let who you are in Jesus Christ identify you. And so unresolved shame can be a huge issue where strongholds are built, which brings us to a fifth one before we move to the next point, and that would be unwise decisions. For Ephesians chapter number 5, "Wherefore, being not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is." And that would be the idea of unwise has the idea of acting rashly. Unwise decisions are people who make terrible decisions, who define their life because of strongholds in their life. They make, it's like the person who goes out and spends money they don't have. And then they're literally caught in a downward spiral of debt they can't seem to get out of. It was an unwise decision. It's about the teenager who stiff-arms his parents, goes and marries, and then realizes, "I'm in trouble. This was not the right time, and you're in a situation where, or maybe the right one, and there's a situation where now it's obviously is the right one because you're married now. But now you're in a spiral because you made an unwise decision." Or it's like this, I don't know, sometimes I feel like teenagers, don't make the wrong decision now. College students, don't make the wrong decision now, because you wake up a decade later and realize you wasted a decade. Unwise decisions come because of strongholds. People are trying to find whatever, and they make unwise, hasty decisions, many times running over God-given authorities in their life who love them or trying to protect them. They just run right over them. Make an unwise decision. And the truth is, many times young people think, "I got plenty of time. I can fix bad decisions." But I've learned this in life as long as I go. People make bad decisions and they wake up 15, 20, 25 years later. And I reminds me of one dear gentleman who talked to me with tears in his eyes. And he said, "I've wasted my life." Boy, that'll kill you. So symptoms of a stronghold is you don't know God. We've seen these issues. But now let's go to the second thing. Obedience is another word here. If you go back to 2 Corinthians, go back if you would please, 2 Corinthians. Tells about every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, verse number 5, and then go down to the next part of the verse. And bringing into captivity every thought, here's the key, to the obedience of Christ. And having in readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. So clearly, the first thing that indicates we got a problem is we don't know God. We don't have a relationship. We're not running to Him. So we got a stronghold. The second one is we don't obey God. So I'm going to just give three things real quickly that are indication. This is huge. Now, many of these are symptomatic. In other words, The root gets deeper. In fact, one of the roots is unhealed hurts is one of the root issues. Some are more symptomatic than the others. But this one's what we're going to call addictive behavior. Addictive behavior, Romans 7, 18, 19. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For the will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not. For the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Sound familiar? I want to do right. I know I shouldn't do this, but I do. And I know I shouldn't watch that, but I do. And I know I shouldn't say that, but I do. And I know I should spend time with God, but I don't. And I know I should read my Bible, but I don't. Oh, wretched man that I am. See, here's the idea here. It's addictive behavior. You don't want to do it, but you end up finding yourself addicted to it. It's the binge purge cycle in the sense that somebody binges in sin and then they purge in the sense that I'm never going to do that and I'm never going to do that again. Then they end up doing it again because it's an addiction. It becomes an addiction. It's interesting if just stunning new science that has been discovered. In fact, it's in the series that we mentioned, and that is that they're discovering now that DNA changes with actions. That a father is an alcoholic, he literally changes his DNA and passes it on to his kids, so they have a greater propensity toward alcohol. This is now science. This is not just, we all know it's Bible, but it's amazing science. Usually always comes around and says, you know, the Bible is right. But it also says this, if that son who gets that alcohol gene doesn't drink alcohol, the DNA changes back. Amen. Now, isn't that amazing? So addictive behavior literally is that. So you young men out here that look at pornography and look at junk, you're putting a pornography stamp on your DNA. And you're going to pass it on to your kids. Now, if you've already passed it on, then you just better work with them and realize that if they'll do right and by the grace of God overcome the thing, the DNA will change back. But addictive behavior. And I mentioned this quote this morning, but addiction at spiritual core is about idolatry. It's about where we're going to find life and fulfillment. It's always a lie, but that's where we go. So whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs, whether it's video games, whether it's pornography, whether it's media, social media, something we become addicted at, and we obviously it becomes destructive. It can even be overworking. Some people are addicted to overworking, and that's their mechanism, their coping mechanism to handle the hurt in their life. They're medicating the pain by just throwing themselves into work, and that's where you get your absent fathers from. Now, I'm going to show you a little clip here of a guy by the name of Simon Sinek, and I only heard of him a few years ago. Somebody sent a link to this very video, and this video is now called The Interview That Broke the Internet. It has 250 million views. That's a lot of views. Now notice what Simon Sinek, he's not a believer clearly, but notice what he says about the addictive nature of social media. Go ahead, run.
Right? Now let's add in technology. We know that engagement with social media and our cell phones releases a chemical called dopamine. That's why when you get a text, it feels good. Right? So you know we've all had it where you're feeling a little bit down or feeling a bit lonely, and so you send out 10 texts to 10 friends, you know, hi. Because it feels good when you get a response, right? Right? It's why we count the likes. It's why we go back 10 times to see if my Instagram is growing slower. Did I do something wrong? Do they not like me anymore? Right? The trauma for young kids to be unfriended, right? Because we know when you get a hit of dopamine, which feels good. It's why we like it. It's why we keep going back to it. Dopamine is the exact same chemical that makes us feel good when we smoke, when we drink, and when we gamble. In other words, it's highly, highly addictive, right? We have age restrictions on smoking, gambling, and alcohol, and we have no age restrictions on social media and cell phones, which is the equivalent of opening up the liquor cabinet and saying to our teenagers, hey, by the way, this adolescence thing, if it gets you down. But that's basically what's happening. That's basically what's happening, right? That's basically what happened. You have an entire generation that has access to an addictive, numbing chemical called dopamine through social media and cell phones as they're going through the high stress of adolescence. Why is this important? Almost every alcoholic discovered alcohol when they were teenagers. When we're very, very young, the only approval we need is the approval of our parents. And as we go through adolescence, we make this transition where we now need the approval of our peers. Very frustrating for our parents, very important for us. It allows us to acculturate outside of our immediate families into the broader tribe, right? It's a highly, highly stressful and anxious period of our lives, and we're supposed to learn to rely on our friends. Some people, quite by accident, discover alcohol and numbing effects of dopamine to help them cope with the stresses and anxieties of adolescence. Unfortunately, that becomes hardwired in their brains, and for the rest of their lives, when they suffer significant stress, they will not turn to a person, they will turn to the bottle. Social stress, financial stress, career stress, that's pretty much the primary reasons why an alcoholic drinks, right? What's happening is, because we're allowing unfettered access to these dopamine-producing devices and media, basically it's becoming hardwired, and what we're seeing is, as they grow older, too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. Their words, not mine. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial. They will admit that their friends, that they don't count on their friends, they don't rely on their friends, they have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them if something better comes along. Deep, meaningful relationships are not there because they never practice the skill set, and worse, they don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with stress. So when significant stress starts to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person, they're turning to a device, they're turning to social media, they're turning to these things which offer temporary relief. We know, the science is clear, we know that people who spend more time on Facebook suffer higher rates of depression than people who spend less time on Facebook.
Well, certainly stunning words. I think we all understand it to some degree. But coping mechanisms, of course, I believe the issue of pornography is certainly a part of that as well. And we all know as believers that the ultimate coping mechanism is what? A relationship with the Lord. It's knowing God. It's knowing Him. So addictive behavior indicates that you are in a situation where you're not returning to God, and now there's this addictive behavior, and in the sense that there's a looking to the dopamine release for whatever the behavior might be, and that becomes how people cope. And again, what he's saying is that turns into someone becoming an addict. Now, there's four things. We're going to talk about this later in another message. I'm going to mention them now. When it comes to addictions, and we are talking about addictions of any nature, whether it's this, social media, whether it's pornography, whether it's alcohol abuse, alcohol, drugs, whatever, there's four. Number one, you have the addictive root. The addictive root is the core issue, which is often overlooked and probably has been for years, and even dealing with the issues, the addictive root, which probably the greatest part of addictive root is the unhealed hurts. The second thing is an addictive mindset. So first of all, there's the root, then they go to the addictive mindset, which obviously now that's when they're handing the devil bricks. Wrong thinkings, and the tower begins to be built. It goes then to an addictive lifestyle. Now, obviously, when they're stressed, they go to whatever that coping mechanism, they go to that. And then last of all, there's an addictive cloak. They have to hide it, particularly if it's shameful, which is the case with viewing issues, and it becomes a cloak. So those are the four issues, and we're going to deal with those and really how the Bible confronts those things and helps you overcome those. It starts with the root. And I believe many times we start with two or three or four, and you got to start with number one, then move to number two, then move to number three, and obviously move to number four. They all have to be dealt with. So addictive behavior. Now let's go to another one, would be angry reactions. This is obviously where someone has been wounded themselves, and I've said this before. Bitter teenagers become angry parents. Angry parents produce bitter teenagers. Bitter teenagers become angry parents. Angry parents produce bitter teenagers. So anger is another indication, because it's obviously a situation of disobedience to God. God obviously tells us, for the wrath of God worketh not the righteousness, or the wrath of men, excuse me, worketh not the righteousness of God. So we know that it doesn't work. And obviously parents sometimes will use wrath as intimidation. In other words, to get the kids to obey. The point is, one day that kid's going to be bigger than you, and no longer does it work. My dad used something else. It's called love. In other words, I don't know how to explain it. I loved my dad, and when I was a teenager and 20 years old or whatever he said, man, I was all ears. It was a really good thing. Because intimidation only goes so far. And that comes out of anger, which is not the... one of the problems with anger when it comes to discipline is anger is all about you. It's not about the kid, and the kid knows it. He knows you're not concerned about them. He knows it's all about you. It's about image. Maybe you're embarrassed. Maybe it's frustrated you. Maybe he woke you up from the nap. And the discipline all comes out of selfish motive, and the kid knows it. And it all indicates, obviously, back that there's a stronghold in your life, a stronghold of anger, a stronghold of reaction. And obviously, it is something that is fairly well seen by other people. That brings us to a third one, and we'll conclude here tonight. You've done a great job. And that is absent roles. Absent roles. Now, that would simply mean, obviously, all of us, if you read Ephesians chapter number 5, God gives us very important roles in the home. So a father is supposed to, the Bible says, bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. He's not to provoke them to wrath. A wife is supposed to reverence her husband. The husband's supposed to love the wife. And so if those become absent in the home, that obviously indicates that there's a stronghold there. So men, think about this for a moment. Do you struggle loving your wife? Wives, do you struggle exuding respect to your husband? Children, do you struggle honoring your parents and obeying them? If you do, you have a stronghold. You have an absent role. You're trying to make life work without obeying God. Very clearly, a stronghold in your life of thinking somehow you think that you can make it work. And here's the point, friends. I think many times we work on public image more than we do on our home. And many times we go on, and I'm talking about some people in this room who really want to be used of God, and there's some roles in your life that you are not fulfilling in your home, and you just push them off and figure, well, God can still use me. Nobody's perfect. Boom, and you pull it off. Just push it off. One thing I believe God has convicted me of is that no matter what area of the life it is, if there's a wrong way of thinking, it hinders us. We got to deal with it. And so I really do urge you to think about this, men. Do you love your wife? If you struggle loving your wife, you have a stronghold in your life. Women, do you struggle reverencing your husband? Do you exude respect? Do you roll your eyes? Do you sigh? And you kind of say, man, you're the biggest oaf there ever was. You don't say it, but that's how you act. You got a stronghold in your life. Your role is absent. See, what your husband needs is he needs respect. You say, well, preacher, there's not a whole lot respectable. Find something you can respect him and respect him. It's probably something he's doing right. See, the point is we get absent in our roles. And we're not doing what we know we ought to do. And we somehow figure, well, oh, nobody sees this except for just a couple people. I can get away with it. No, we don't get away with it. And children, you can think, oh, you know, I can just, you know, you can be a little disrespectful to mom and dad. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And fathers, when you become absent as the one who brings them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Thank the Lord for wives that are on it, and they need to be, obviously, but obviously we're part of the equation too, bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's those both the positive and the negative. There's the positive side. Nurture and admonition is encouraging your young people. I mean, casting a vision for their life. And the obviously part of it is negative and correcting them, saying, no, you can't do that around here. Nope. I don't know how my dad did it. I do not know how he did it, but I will tell you this. My dad drove into my heart respect. I don't remember ever being disrespectful to my dad, not one time. Not one time. Never remember being disrespectful. And I'm not taking credit for that. If you lived in our home, that's what you did. You didn't treat dad disrespectfully. Now, I have to admit, at times maybe I did with my mother. It wasn't horrendous, but maybe a little bit more because she was a great disciplinarian, don't get me wrong. But on that case, she would maybe let a little bit of stuff she probably shouldn't have. But no, if my dad showed up, totally different. So my point simply is this, no matter where you are in the whole thing, absent roles. Think about your roles at home. Is there just huge gaping holes there? Because it is, you got a stronghold. And it may come from the fact the way you were raised. If you had a father who was passive, you will have a tendency to be passive. So you have to realize, I've got a stronghold. I watched a man not engage the home, not deal with problems, not deal with problems in his marriage, not deal with problems in the home, and I began to build a stronghold in my life, and now I'm a father, and I do the same thing. Now, that stronghold can come down. We're going to be talking about that. And I believe by the grace of God, you can become the father that you ought to be. I didn't get his permission, but I don't think he'd mind. I have just absolutely loved watching Matt Weber be a father. You know why? Because he didn't have one. You know what? I watch Matt Weber being a father. You know what I can tell? He loves being a dad. And you know what he has not done? He has not repeated what his dad did. He has started over and said, I'm going to give my kids what I didn't get. You know what I think that is? Phenomenal. That's what grace is all about. So the point, friends, if you look back to your own childhood and realize, yeah, I got some strongholds because I viewed some roles that were just not. Some of you in this room came from a home where mom ran the home. She was dominant. She ran the home. And the truth is, you knew she ran the home. You're not dumb on the thing. You get that. If you're not careful, you assume the roles of your parents. Now, you can do it, but it won't work. You can do it. And the point is, I see this all the time. A woman who runs the home and then tries to make everybody think that her husband is running the home. What everybody knows, it's like, your husband may be dumb, but I don't think he's that dumb. You're running the home. That was your model. And I'll tell you, it's a wrong model. It's not a Bible model. You can do it, but it's not a Bible model. And some of you dads, part of the problem is there's nobody there, so she's having to fill in the gap, and sometimes it's a matter of you're just not there to do your job. So I'm not trying to put it just on the ladies' side. The point is, there's absent roles in our society. Would you not say that in many homes, even our Christian homes, that the roles that God has given us just aren't being done? And I'm telling you, friends, all I want you to know is it comes from a stronghold. It's a wrong way of thinking. Somehow, some way, you have bought into thinking that is not biblical, and it won't work. Doesn't work. And the truth is, friends, I am convinced it's like this. When a wife runs the home and the situation like that, many times what happens is you say to the kid, this is what you're saying, kid, I want you to obey us just like I don't obey your father. And you know what happens? Your actions speak louder than words. The point is, friends, I've learned this over the years, when some kid just walks out and hates God and wants nothing to do with Christianity, there's a reason. I never thought about walking out on God. You know why? Because he was too real in my home. The point I'm simply making, and all I'm just trying to help us all see, I know this is not always easy to hear, but what I want us to do is identify and say, Lord, is there a stronghold that I got in the roles? It's like this, friends. When it's a kid must, that the foundation of a young person turning out for God is that his parents unconditionally love him just like God does. Unconditional, absolutely unconditional. But the truth is, some of you came from homes where you didn't feel loved. And you have had a hard time communicating to your kids that you love them. And maybe you've gotten frustrated and irritated, disciplined in anger, and that ends up being a problem. It's a stronghold. All I'm simply saying, you can be delivered. You say, well, my kids are out of the home. Well, they may be out of the home, but it's still good to get the stronghold down and see it and ask God to help you rectify the thing. And so what happens in that case where there's been a lot of discipline but not a lot of communicating of love is those kind of kids will run to the loosey-goosey, lovey-dovey church at the edge of town. That's where they run. They're looking for unconditional acceptance, and they'll find it there. But they should have found it in our homes. Does that make sense? See, all I'm simply saying, absent roles don't work. They don't work. Now, I'm not trying, how about I put this? I'm not in any way trying to rub salt in the wounds, and I certainly don't want anybody, that's not my point. My point is we got to identify the strongholds. And identifying the strongholds, I knew when I prepared this message, I said, this is going to be rough. Because identifying strongholds, saying, yeah, I see it, I've been thinking incorrectly, it's affected my actions. But you can't deal with wrong thinking until you realize I've been thinking incorrectly. And it's something that I guess in tonight's message, my goal is kind of like we did this morning, except this is a little bit more of an application, is to ask the Lord, Lord, would you show me? Would you show me? Maybe he already has. Because I've learned this. I've not lived very long, but I've learned this. You don't get away with nothing. Any part of your life, you think, well, that's not that big a deal. And that's what we often do with strongholds, especially the ones that don't get us very often. We just, that's not a big deal. I have pretty much victory over here, pretty much victory over here. And what happens is, that's why we hit the ceiling. We just can't break through. And perhaps along the line, we come to the point that there's no hope. And if there's anything I want you to do is walk out of this. Jesus heals the brokenhearted. Jesus is the one that delivers. He is Jehovah, the one who saves, and he can deliver you. And you need to walk out of the service tonight, even after identifying the strongholds. Don't walk out with despair. Walk out. God is helping me identify the strongholds because he wants them to come down. And in coming down, friends, he changes us. And some of you know a little bit of what I'm talking about because perhaps you have had to deal with some consequences of strongholds, and God has used those to break your heart and help you understand it. And God graciously uses consequences to help us see needs in our hearts and lives. So my burden, friend, for all of us. Okay, how about it? How's the marriage? How's the parenting? How are your kids doing with mom and dad? How's it going? Because it doesn't work. It just doesn't work if you don't do it biblically. So strongholds. I was thinking about strongholds and thinking, you know, how can I end the message? How can I put it all together? And I thought, you know, there's different people I've known throughout the years who had major strongholds in their life. I think we're all have been touched, this church, you've been here any length of time, with Steve Currington. Here's a man who had immense strongholds in his life. And yet God used him in a remarkable way to touch thousands of people with freedom from addictions. And it still is touching people. Wouldn't you say, friends, that the strongholds in his life and the fact that he, by the grace of God, overcame them and then led others to overcome them has been something that I'm sure, even though he didn't live long, brought great fulfillment in his heart in those latter years. So what if I told some of you out here, yeah, I got some problems. What if I told you you're going to write a book and a million people are going to read it and it's going to help some? Would you be interested? Or you're going to have a group of people here at the church, you're going to help them overcome the same stronghold that God helps you. Would you be interested? See, the point is, friend, overcoming strongholds is not just us, it touches other people. And I have found this, as you begin to grow in a certain situation, God brings people to you that need exactly what you have learned by God's grace. So the hope is not just to get the strongholds down. The hope, friends, is to help other people who have had the same strongholds as you and lead them to hope and victory that maybe they've lost hope of, but you say, no, God did it in my life. He can do it in yours. And that's what I want you to live with, the hope. And that's the amazing thing, that when I meet people who have had strong issues of strongholds, we all have some, but I mean some of these big issues, like that man that does the Conquer series, a man who was involved in deep sexual addictions, a rageaholic, a man who was completely addicted to sin, and God not only has delivered him, he's using him to lead thousands of men to victory in moral purity arenas. Wow, isn't that phenomenal? That's what God does. And that's what he wants to do in all of our lives. So identify the strongholds. Could I ask every head bowed, please, and eyes closed. Heads are bowed and eyes are closed. Now, just in the quiet of the moment here, are you the kind that's addicted to your cell phone? Do you look for dopamine hits? See, the point is, strongholds are sometimes very subtle, but modern society has filled us with possibilities. My burden tonight is for us to just simply say, God, you've identified a stronghold. I want it down. I want to be different. Now, we had a similar invitation this morning. You've raised your hand this morning, I understand, but maybe God's brought something new to my heart and mind, but here it is. How many would simply say, preacher, God is dealing with me. He's identifying a stronghold or strongholds in my life, and I am grateful that he's doing it because I believe if he's revealing it, he wants it to come down. Would you just lift your hand as an indication of God working? Amen. God bless. That's wonderful. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. You can put your hands down. Well, I think what we'll do is, would you just stand to your feet right where you are? Just stand to your feet. I'm going to do something a little bit different tonight because we had a similar invitation this morning. I'm just going to ask the piano to play, and if God has particularly struck your heart with something, you say, that needs to change in my life. I need that stronghold down. I'm just going to invite you to sit right where you are. Just a moment. Sit and tell God about it. And say, God, I want to leave with hope. Because if you've revealed the stronghold, I believe you want to take it down. So as the piano plays, just sit right where you are and talk to God about it.